All right, great. So we'll start with the theme music, and we don't have theme music really. All that the two of us do is we play When the Saints Go Marching In on mouth horns.
Okay. I think we're getting good at it too.
No. Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. We could get signed. Yeah, we might not get signed as a podcast, but we may release a single. You are free to join us on the mouth horns if you'd like.
Hang on, let me grab mine.
Yeah. All right. And so, Ron, are you ready?
I'm ready. All right.
3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 12 after week 11 in the first season of City Saint Country Saint. I am your host, Charles Starr, mourning the loss of another division game. Here with me, as always, my friend, L. Ron Mexico. Hey. Ron, how are you feeling?
I don't know. Violent, I think, is the word after this game. Like, felonious. Like, I want to... Yeah. You ever seen the movie Celtic Pride? How they, like, those guys kidnap the player of the opposing team so that their team could win? I want to do that, but Derek Carr and Dennis Allen, so that we can win. I'm starting to think of criminal conspiracies I can do as a person to right the ship. That's how desperate I am.
Yeah, we are way beyond the mailing poops.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a rough one. I think if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to petition to shrink the field to 60 yards. Which I don't know. I like possibly a Pandora's box. Maybe we can't move the ball at all. Yeah. But so far, I feel like we can move the ball 60 yards. I feel good about that.
Yeah.
With us this week to gloat and to celebrate a division win, you know him from the excellent Shutdown Fullcast and Channel 6 and all of those associated properties, and a recently published novelist. Welcome, my friend Jason Kirk. Jason, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Maybe I should do the mouth trumpet of like Young Jeezy's Weed At. That feels like a decent counter. Maybe yes. A little bring him out. Luda was at the game on some sort of a trapeze or something, which looked like his old music videos. So you're getting Move Bitch on the mouth trumpet.
That's right. That's nice. Little bit of Young Thug to celebrate the atrocious opening arguments.
Which, Thriving Humbly Under God or whatever is what his lawyer is arguing Thug stands for, which is the kind of thing that he's actually said on his albums. Like, it actually is part of the brand. It's just amazing it made its way into court. I'm glad. Yeah, sure. I hope it works. Good for him. But thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here. It's wonderful to I said this right before we started recording. It's wonderful to meet the person who obtained the handle L. Ron Mexico, because I've been jealous of it for I don't even know how many years. So.
Yeah, I'm an old Michael Vick fan and a big Scientologist, so it made sense. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of us. Yes.
Yeah, there's no irony in it at all. He keeps telling me how fucked up my Engrams are.
Yeah, you're due for an audit, Charles.
More ways than one. I've been writing off like thousands of dollars on this podcast. And I still don't have a working microphone, so they don't know where the money's going.
The trumpet, obviously.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. So let's just talk quickly, because I want to do this before it slips my mind. Tell me about the book. Your book just came out. Is this week or this month?
So a few days ago, we started pre-orders for my novel.
Oh, pre-orders. Okay. So it's not published.
You're still ahead of the game. It's publishing, in fact, the day after the Super Bowl, when surely the Saints will be in that game. I just know it.
That's right. They are performing behind Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
He's also been invited back.
Usher was probably also at the stadium yesterday. Yeah. It's called Hell is a World Without You. It's about growing up evangelical, and it's a whole lot funnier and angrier than that might sound. 100% of pre-order profits are going to the Trevor Project, if that tells you anything about where the evangelicalism ended up.
Yeah.
but yeah, very, very excited by the first week response.
That's awesome. And so when did you break away, as it were?
I realized I had broken away like a few years into college, basically. But I'd started like toward the end of high school. So it was a sort of this big fuzzy thing where it's like, oh no, I'm still down for the cause. Of course I am. Look, I married a Christian girl, you know? And yeah, she's still a Christian, but you know.
Did you speak in tongues and all that stuff too?
I was like invited to once, but we were less charismatic. We were more mega churchy. Like less hardcore charismatic, I guess I should say.
All right.
I've witnessed speaking in tongues, and I was invited and was like, I guess I could just recite some Busta Rhymes lyrics. I don't know.
You could. I grew up similar to you, it sounds like, but mega church. Yeah. I was, I guess, the charisma. I was the quote unquote crazy church, you know, like hopping around, speaking in tongues. We didn't handle snakes or nothing, but it got very, and I kind of broke same time maybe as you. It was like during college, and I was like, oh, there's other stuff, like there's other people, the world's so much bigger. And then yeah, I was like, this is kind of silly. But I used to do it. I mean, yeah, you could speak, you could. I don't want to shit on the tongue speaking people, because I still have some affinity for that. But it's kind of real. It's kind of not real, you know. But yeah, I know what you mean. It was a real big eye opening thing when you kind of start interacting with the real world and seeing how far removed that is from reality, or how vicious and mean some of it is.
Yeah, and how much of it is about just in groupness and a very specific kind of identity politics, and like how much of it is about just like our team is good team, everyone not on our team is bad team, and like how little of it is about like the shit that's actually in the gospel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had a much milder upbringing, you know. It was just kind of very secular conservative Judaism. You know, my parents sent me to Hebrew school, which was like either after school or on the weekends or whatever. And they were surprised when I wanted to go to services on Saturday because it seemed interesting. And then, you know, because it was a youth congregation, not the fucking boring old person service, where my wife, the first time she heard Jews singing, because she grew up Presbyterian with a mom who was like a music teacher, was like, what the fuck atonal shit is this? Like, this is, and it's not even English. It's just a bunch of people droning in an ancient language. You know, I kind of decided I was an atheist like when I was 12, and I faked it in front of my parents for 5 years, who were kind of, this is where I was getting to, who were kind of heartbroken when I told them. My dad decided it was a phase, my mom was horrified, but they kind of got past it and they didn't ultimately care that much. But evangelical seems like a bit hardcore, and if this is like too heavy for a stupid football podcast, I can, like, you can just defer.
No, let's go. Let's go. Yeah.
But like, how did your parents take the revelation that you were not into?
Many years of denial, I would say. A lot, like for a long time, it was basically like, well, he'll come back around, right? And like, you know, I've come back around to like my own forms of theism, and I would argue a form of Christianity. A lot of Christians would say it's not, and that's fine. I don't need their affirmation. Right. But like my evangelical family members, it is still this thing where it's like, we just can't talk about this. Cause like anytime we ever have, it has gone poorly. Right. And yeah, that's kind of where it is. And I know exactly what is in their heads, because it used to be in mine. And it is, everyone who doesn't agree with this version of this thing will be tormented in hell forever, and it is on me to change their minds. And if they don't agree with me, then I feel that's what they're thinking, right? They feel guilty about me risking my soul forever and all that stuff. And that sucks for everybody.
Ron, did you like come out to them as not caring so much?
Yeah,
or did they just kind of notice it in your behavior?
They just kind of noticed it. But like my dad, we grew up Catholic, but then we left the Catholic Church. My dad didn't really carry the way. But my mom, and it wasn't, I don't know if you would call it what we were, evangelical, but more like some kind of holiness Pentecostal, if you had to put word on it. It's mostly non-denominational. But our family, they gave my mom, like parts of my family, my mom a hard time because of that. And because of what she went through, I think she got a lot of compassion. So when I kind of deviated from the church I grew up most of my life in, she really was compassionate towards me for leaving it because she knows what it felt like when she left the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And my mom is really interesting because like she's not mega churchy, you know, she's not like that. She doesn't have she's turned off by the conservative aspect of it. I guess because it was a black church we grew up in predominantly. It was the only white family. And so like she always hated the racism that came with that. So like she's very like progressive and free thinking or whatever you would want to call it to that degree. So she was like imbued with this amount of compassion. But because of that, she has the most one of interesting takes on life and on spirituality. So she's one of the only people I can have like a genuine spiritual conversation with because she's not, it's not like talking to the TV or like not like talking to the megachurch people. Like she has her own weird kind of beliefs that are very genuine. And I appreciate that. So like we get along great. But I think, I do think, you know, like Jason said, I kind of have like my own, I guess I'm kind of a Christian theist in a lot of ways, but I don't need those beliefs affirmed through, you know, like, or just like he said, I feel that, like, that's exactly kind of where I'm at right now. I don't know if I believe Jesus was the Son of God, you know, specifically. He's probably a cool dude if he existed, but like, I definitely believe in some kind of God, like whatever the Gospels, like the Sermon on the Mount, all the stuff he said that the Christians of this country do not follow. That's the good stuff in the Bible, yeah. For the most part.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I outgrew being a dick about being an atheist. I didn't outgrow being an atheist, but I outgrew caring that other people are not.
Yeah.
I have become, I think, more culturally Jewish. You know, I have more ailments. One of the things that I like about Judaism is that it is a very strict non-proselytizing religion. Though the part that they don't tell you is that internal proselytizing is fine, which is why you get accosted by people in Brooklyn asking if you're Jewish, because if you're not, then you're once again invisible. But if you are, they are like, you know, usually like Lubavitchers who want to bring you in.
It's kind of like Catholics and Protestants trying to convert each other for like the last 500 years.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. As far as I can tell, the Catholics won. And all of the Protestants are now in America are now basically Catholics, but they don't like the Pope.
Yeah.
And now neither do American Catholics.
Yeah, no one in America likes the Pope, as I understand.
Yeah. He's liberal code.
I saw that he just...
To them. Yes, that's... That's a big problem
for fucking Pope.
When I first reached out to you, I did not know if Sunday was your day of rest to merge these discussions. You are a college football guy, and so I wasn't sure if you had like NFL affiliations that you cared about. But do you grow up in Georgia, I take it?
I was born in Atlanta, born at Crawford Long Hospital in Atlanta. I've been a Falcons fan since Dion was there.
Right.
And yeah, I've been through all the bad shit ever since. I would say the highs and the lows, but let's be honest, it's almost entirely lows. The New Orleans Saints have been my least favorite football team almost my entire life. So
yeah,
happy to be here.
Yes,
of course. I was very happy to learn. Like, I don't know, expat isn't even the right word. I was never, as a weirdo Saints fan, to develop a hatred for Atlanta was interesting, but I did it. I did it. I made it work.
It was always hard for me to hate, like the having season tickets for as long as I did. When the Falcons fans came to the dome, there was like, we gave each other a lot of shit, but it was a feeling of camaraderie still. You know, they kind of felt like our little brother. So, like, I never really, even like, I know the 28-3 memes and stuff like that. I never got on board that. I still feel bad. Like, y'all should have won that game, man. I hate the Patriots.
I tend to agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, I need to beat the Falcons every year twice. Like, I need that in my soul. Like, I feel that. But I don't wish the awful things that have happened to y'all has happened. You know, like, it's
terrible. Well, that is very, very, very kind and generous of you. I will say y'all have a ring, so I no longer feel that. So, like, if we had won that game, you wouldn't feel that anymore. Yeah. So, like, now when the bad things happen in the playoffs, when the Vikings do the things to y'all that they do every few years, I'm like, they have a ring. They're fine. This is hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, we lost to the Vikings a couple of weeks ago, and that's basically exactly what Travis said. You have the ring, and we don't have the ring, so I don't really care. Yeah. If you suffer anymore, because even though we have so many bad losses to the Vikings, the real bad Vikings loss was to us. Like the year that it really should have. Well, actually, the Atlanta game also, when Gary Anderson missed.
So like
the goal.
Vikings' last two worst losses were to current NFC South teams.
That's right. That's right. The others are when they just got the brakes beat off of them. But those two were like real pain. Yeah. And so he's like, you don't have sympathy anymore. I don't give a shit if you. But he also felt like he couldn't despise us because he just keeps seeing us step on rakes in the stupidest way in the playoffs.
I remember growing up, it was like, the Saints are our rival. And, you know, you grow up in college football world, you have this sense of like, my team has a rival, therefore I don't like it, right? And it was always just like, well, we're so terrible. How could we have a rival? And they're like sometimes even worse than we are, you know? So it was like the battle for last place in the NFC wrong division, you know, forever until finally we got moved in the NFC South. Yeah. And it was just like, this is so sad. We're fighting for draft position or something. And then around the same time, it's like they've always like crested together. Like they played each other in the playoffs forever ago. I don't think I was around at the time. And then like they both started to get good around the time of Drew Brees and Matt Ryan. And like, it's just always been this like highs and lows together, the two franchises. And like right now, you know, for the past few years, incredibly mid 5-6 atop the NFC South together. Like it's like,
still in first place.
Yeah.
I mean, we losing the tiebreaker, but we have a revenge game. Yes. To get the tie, but it doesn't matter. We're gonna lose
to get
that tiebreaker anyway.
To get up to 8-9 and not up the standings. But like it was like during the 2000s when it turned in from like, this rivalry is I guess whatever, to like, I fucking hate this team. And then over the last few years it sort of mellowed out for me where it's like, if we go 2-15 but we beat them, that's fine. It's not like I like watch y'all's games cursing you out anymore. You know, it's not like I pay attention.
Right.
It's the level of hate has gone down significantly, but it's still like, sure, I hope they lose all the time.
Yeah, I definitely watch out of the corner of my eye when it matters. Like I ordinarily would root against Carolina too, but I can't even root against them now. Now it just means they get a better draft pick. Like Carolina's a team that I want to go like 5-12, not 1-16. You know, like I wanted to be just barely miss the guy who they really want.
There's like on the I always notice this on like the Falcons Wikipedia page, it's like rivals, Saints, Panthers, and it's like, what? No one has ever thought of the Panthers. That I don't know if the Panthers think of us. That no one has ever thought of the War of 85 or whatever.
I'm pretty sure the Cornell page lists Harvard as a rival, sure. But the Harvard page does not.
Yeah, go get them.
List Cornell as rival. And so now I'm trying to figure out the affiliations of everyone on the full cast. I know Ryan is Florida and Holly is Tennessee. And I think Spencer is Georgia.
Spencer's Florida
yes. Too. And are you Georgia?
A Georgia Tech fan, but that didn't take.
I
went to a FCS school that's moving up to Conference USA called Kennesaw State.
Uh-huh.
We're brand new at football. There's not a whole lot of intense emotions there, I'll be honest.
And so, okay, but you became a big college football fan. Did you have like an SEC team or a big ACC team who you like invested your heart in, even without, you know, alumni affiliation?
There was a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of Georgia Tech indoctrination. There's a lot of, we love this team. We care about this team so much. And it was like, gosh, I'm trying so hard. And that held for a while. That held longer than evangelicalism did. I'll say that. even though they're both just as depressing, I assure you. One of them has much better math. The other one is, says the earth is 6,000 years old. So it's like, it's, you know, one is much better at explaining the universe, I think. But yeah, we were always taught like SEC fans are bad and stupid and
mean. Megatron?
Yes. But it wasn't enjoyable because his quarterback was very bad. His quarterback was Reggie Ball, who, despite having Calvin Johnson, is arguably the worst 4-year quarterback in the history of college football.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's
like
rough.
Under 50% completion some years, despite throwing to Calvin Johnson.
That's crazy. That's crazy, because we were talking last week about how the Saints, you know, used a first-round pick on Steve Walsh, and Steve Walsh's job was to drop back and throw it so Michael Irvin could run under it. Like just throw it as hard as you can.
Yeah.
Don't worry, you can't out-throw him.
Yeah, down down there somewhere offense.
Yeah. All right, so how did you hook up with the Fullcast?
So around like 2008 or 9, I started writing at The Falcoholic, SB Nation's Falcons blog. And I had moved over there from a different Falcons blog or whatever. And what drew me there was, at SB Nation, was Spencer's EDSBS. So I was like, if I'm going to write for a Falcon site anyway, I might as well write with the one where my favorite college football writer is. And then a couple years later, I got moved up in charge of some SB Nation Atlanta stuff. And it was... and Spencer needed a co-host for this very stupid video show he was doing, so I was like, well, let's make it even stupider. And that yeah. turned into the Fullcast, and nice. That was like 11 years ago.
Oh, that's awesome. Ron, questions, thoughts?
About the universe?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it.
I don't, I'm an accelerationist now, but for the Saints losing, I think. I've changed my whole... I think my thought about this game was like I didn't get to really see much of it because I was at a family function and the TV was in a room without the people, and I would have looked insane for watching us lose and while, you know, missing family, you know, a good family time with my extended family. But what I did see, right. It made me think that Dennis Allen has to go, Derek Carr has to go. Like, does anybody object to that?
Yes.
No. You did? Oh, of
yeah,
course.
Well, sure.
Okay, well, yeah. That just proves
cruel,
my point. Yeah.
True.
That's
right.
Yeah, we need to do something to get these guys out of here, or to make, who's in charge? Mickey Loomis needs to fire these people. A bench car. I don't know what has to happen. I'm at my wit's end with this team. I'm just really frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm not a huge Mickey Loomis fan either. Because he keeps drafting people that are either like made of like balls of wood or are just unable to keep themselves on the field. You know, like our first round pick, Brian Brzee, is like a rotation guy on the line. Our second round pick is not getting in the lineup for more than a couple, you know, plays a game. I think Foskey may have been a healthy scratch. Yeah, he was. Our third round pick was Saldivari, an offensive lineman who was also a healthy scratch. Our fourth round pick is our third string quarterback, healthy scratch. Kendry Miller, I think, may be hurt, so he's a little different. The year before, Trevor Penning, our first round offensive lineman who got hurt on the first play of like the first preseason game last year, missed the whole year with turf toe, came back this year, and like they're teaching him to walk like he's in rehab, so he played six downs on special teams, and that's it. You know, Peyton Turner, like every time someone like asks him to turn, like if someone talks to him and he's not expecting it, he strains something. So yeah. Like, he was our first round pick like 2 or 3 years ago, and he's played like one game that I remember.
Yeah, I think like...
So what is Mickey Loomis
he's
doing?
He's just good at doing cap stuff. That's it. He's just good at kicking the can down the road and working numbers, but he can't scout talent at all. Like, he's bad for that. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean, they're eventually going to get to the point where all of those chickens are going to come home to roost and the team's going to go 0-17 because the actual active roster is like being paid a total of like $10 million.
I feel like I've been hearing this for like 10 years though. I'm like, when is this finally going? I am so eagerly anticipating.
I don't Tom Benson died only so he wouldn't go to prison for running a Ponzi scheme. There's no way that they are lying about their returns. They are paying new fans with old fans season ticket revenue. Something is going on, but they have had salary cap problems since Drew Brees was in San Diego.
The can being kicked down the road. I'm like, how fucking long is this road? Because
Yeah, it's halfway up the Mississippi.
Yeah, he's good at it. He's a professional can kicker.
Yes.
And that's what he needs to just focus on. Because every year he puts together, I'm like, all right, this is the year we go 0-17. And no, like, oh, he did he worked his magic. So, like, I literally think that it's kind of like the national debt or whatever, right? Everybody says, oh, the debt. You just print more. He's got a money machine somewhere. He's figuring it out. He's doing MMT, but for salary cap shit. I don't know how he's getting away with it. But yeah, he can't scout anything. He chose the wrong coach. He paid the wrong quarterback for sure. And I don't know what Gale thinks, the owner. I don't know nothing about Gale. It's weird that we even have owners in this way. Like, it's just some lady that, like, you know, like married a really old guy and now she controls the city. It's I guess, whatever, but I don't know who she is or what she wants out of any of this. What it would take her to make a move. Yeah. It's impossible to, you know, you can't look for logic in the hearts of that, so... I don't know. I'm at my wit's end.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good time. We can segue into the game, and we will segue into the game by inviting Jason. This may be the first, we're week 11, and this may be the first actual live hurtful.
Yeah.
Get our because we keep inviting people on who are like, you know, I gotta be honest, I don't actually care about football that much. Yeah. You know, I did this because we're friends, Charles, and I don't care about football that much. And so, like, they don't do it with any passion. The only one who did was Alex for Green Bay, and then it turned out that she was not using a real recording app. And so she had to redo it. And it just didn't have the same verve of when she kicked us in the cubes in person. So, Jason, this game is over. You came away with the 24-15 win. It is time for you to get our ass.
Is there a song for this part?
There is.
we could make one. We should make one. I'll work on that.
We throw it out to the City Saint, Country Saint family. If anyone wants to write a song for Get Our Ass, you may feel free to do so.
Yeah. I can make one. I'll go on the spot. Chicka, 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 we suck, we suck. Get our ass. We cannot rush. We cannot pass. We can't play D. We can't, I don't even see. We run at each other and we don't score no touch. We fucking suck. Like, just like this song. Get our ass, Jason, all day long. All right, there we go.
I love
that's
it.
The song. That's the song.
That's my favorite song of the day, without question. So if this had been like 7 or 8 years ago, I would have cut a promo on y'all with all my heart and just paraded up and down the street celebrating a victory over the Saints. But, you know, I don't know. I'm mellowing out a bit. So, I mean, I will say this. First things first, the New Orleans Saints in this game were the ugliest fucking uniforms I've ever seen in the NFL, at least. I've seen some uglier shit in college, but like that shade of like sharp gold like puke brown? Puke's not supposed to be brown, you know? I don't even know what color that was going for, but and it was made even worse by the Falcons wearing their best uniforms, their vivid cherry red helmets, like their glorious OG throwbacks, contrasted with just looks like some Nike Pro Combat shit from 2012, like some shit Boise State would be wearing. It's just a hideous shade of brown on the Saints. Which, and it's not like it's a pretty gold anyway, you know? It's not like the Saints actually wear gold. It's always sort of like a khaki, but like, yeah. It's like filthy khaki. And
black and khaki. That's the tradition.
The lights of Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the actual Mercedes-Benz Stadium, excuse me, the actual best stadium sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. I'm very, very invested in the corporate machinations of Mercedes-Benz.
No, I understand.
The lights in Atlanta Stadium are so bright that uniforms always look notoriously vivid. This was a thing in one of the first big games. There was like it was like a Peach Bowl or something, or maybe a college national title game, and it was like going viral, like how crazy everyone's uniforms look because the lights are so bright and they're like this weird kind of light that looks weird on TV. So maybe that made the uniforms look even worse than they were intended to look, but it felt like ugly was the goal. And maybe it's a saintly thing. Maybe it's like a humility thing. Like, oh, we don't want to make anyone lust, so we want to look like shit. I don't know. Maybe there's a holy element, holy angle to it or something. But y'all look terrible. And then you played football, and it got even worse.
Right.
Yeah. We deserve that. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I kind of like the black helmet. It looked unnatural, but I was like, it's kind of sharp. If it weren't so disorienting to see the Saints in a black helmet, you know, if there were like a gang based on the Saints, the black helmet kind of looks sharp. Yeah. But it felt a little, but I liked it, but it did feel a little weird.
Like a black helmet with like a white fleur-de-lis could look pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love those White Shoes Johnson red helmets. You know,
that was pretty cool.
Those were really nice. I like that. It's kind of an old school logo that still feels modern. That Falcon.
Yeah. The other thing,
I didn't want it in the end zone that much.
The other thing about this game was with like the many parts of the country celebrating like the 50th anniversary of hip hop, Atlanta being a very important hip hop town, they invited like dozens of Atlanta rappers to this game. Luda performed, T.I. performed before the game, but like literally, there's a photo. The entire end zone is full of rappers, and I remember every Falcons fan was like, "Oh my God, we cannot lose in front of." You know, Big Gip. We cannot lose in front. Yeah. He brought back all of
the Goody Mob just for us to lose. Sad.
That cannot happen. Yeah. We cannot lose in front of Kilo Ali. No. There's 18 guys named Young something or other.
Yeah.
Right.
Slim Calhoun can't see us.
Slim Calhoun. Luda cannot have sex on the 50-yard line unless we win this game.
That was
prophesied long ago by Luda.
Well, I'm glad we did.
I'm glad
part.
Luda got to do that, so
yeah.
Now he can have sex.
Good for him.
But this game was something, man. It was as well as we've moved the ball against a real football team all season.
That's very kind of you to say.
Right? Like we beat the Patriots by like 40, but I don't even think they were there. It was just like we were playing like holograms, and so that doesn't even count. Like this today, we just kind of moved up and down the field, and every time we like got to like the 30, the 20, we were just like, that's enough offense for now. I think we've proved what we came to prove. And either you can have this ball or we're going to let Tiny Tim take a whack at it with his surprisingly powerful leg.
444 yards is, I'm trying to see. I think that might be the most yards that the Falcons have given up this year. Yeah. It's right up there. Yeah, that's the most yards.
Oh, wow.
And
I mean, they had over 400 yards.
Yeah, yeah. And
they had over 400 yards of offense.
The previous high was 351, so it's an excellent day of offense.
It was one thing when he threw the pick six, which was a terrible throw. Derek, the most frustrating thing about Derek Carr is he's been playing for a long time, and he's had, like, real pile-up-the-yard seasons. So you think that, like, what he's got is, like, a good NFL arm. And he is so inaccurate unless he is throwing, like, a deep ball or a screen. All of his slants are just shit. He either makes the receiver reach back and then get fucking blown up. Yeah. Like, his three best receivers are on the IL now.
Because of him, I think.
Right? Yeah. Olave got a concussion because he threw the pass like 8 feet in the air and then he crashed over the top of the guy tackling him. Rashid Shaheed had to reach back and, like, I don't know if his foot got stuck in the turf or something. And Michael Thomas hit by a helmet in the knee. And he's, but that's it. Like, next week, you know, I got a call. I may have to suit up.
Yeah.
But he, like, his passes are really bad. And there was one where Juwan Johnson was wide open and he led him way too much. Mm-hmm. And they cut right to Johnson's face. And his face was like, what the fuck, man? Yeah. Like, I mean, I may just be reading into it, but I thought he looked like, what kind of fucking pass was that?
Yeah.
Because that's what it was all game, just spraying it. And the pick six wasn't like the defensive back stepped in front of the receiver. The defensive back stepped in front of another defensive back who the ball was going to.
Did you see what he said in the post game about that? He was like, they asked Carr about it, and he was like, well, what's the fella's name who turned it for six, the safety?
Bates,
yeah. He said, well, it's like Bates made the wrong move. He was supposed to stick with his assignment. He left made his responsibility. Yeah, he was like, he's not supposed to, like,
leave his responsibility.
Yeah, he was like he wasn't supposed to do that, and then he made the play. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what?
He had a miscommunication with the safety.
Yeah. I was like, who? Derek Carr is, like, so frustrating.
Yeah, it makes it sound like it was a bid rigging scheme.
Yeah.
He promised to leave that one for the receiver. Yeah. And we're very disappointed.
Yeah. Like, man, this is not wrestling, man. Like, what are you talking about?
God. Yeah, I mean, I did see that quote. I read it differently. I didn't read it in larger context. I thought he was, like, just saying that because of the way they were set up, he expected him to be in the middle of the field. He made a good decision and a good play. But to me, what that means is that he saw Derek Carr go tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, that's where the ball's going, and just jumped the route.
Yeah.
You know, that is definitely what it seemed like. Mm. The Carr telegraphed the throw, and a smart player picked it with nothing but grass in front of him. That hurt, too. That one really fucking hurt, because it looked like we were about to take the lead, and it just... Oh, no, we were up 3-0, and it looked like we were about to, we're going to roll this fucking team, hell yeah. And all of a sudden we're losing, and then it became just a game of forcing Groupie to kick field goal after field goal, and the fifth field goal made me a little mad, but at least he hit that one. Like, it was 4th and 5, we were down by 11, I think we were down by 11 or we were down by 9.
Still a 2-score game.
Yeah. But, yeah, I wanted us to try to get the touchdown there. But at least he hit that field goal. then on the next long field goal opportunity, when he sent Groupie out again, I was like, oh, fuck you, man. Like, you are the biggest coward. Yeah. And then, of course, he missed it because, like, how many 50-yard field goals is your kind of mediocre rookie going to hit? You know, he hasn't had a good enough season for you to say to yourself, oh, I definitely want this guy in the record books going 6 for 6. I think that'll happen.
I think the other play I'll remember most other than the pick six is Taysom Hill's catch. He had a catch along the sidelines, like falling backward. The best catch I remember him making. He's probably made a number of them, but that's the one where I was like, oh.
I mean, not a ton. He usually doesn't have to get that acrobatic. His runs are more exciting. Yeah,
like usually.
And his catch is usually. But yeah, it was. It was great. Put it up, and I was like, ugh. Yeah. And then he,
yes, exactly.
Because, you're not like Taysom Hill is like, it's not even sneaky anymore. He's probably the best athlete on the team, which is why he's so versatile the way he is. But that's not really supposed to be in his skill set. Like, that's, you know, you don't really want him throwing a deep ball because, you know, he's hit a couple of them, but he also sort of throws it a little short when he's hucking at 50. That's not his best ability. But that was all right. They played him much better on the run, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one time that he actually broke free was the one where they punched it out.
Mm.
That was also Bates. You know, he had run for like 10 yards and gotten the first down, and Bates hammered it out of his hand. That was frustrating. Yeah.
Jace, what was the other good catch you saw Taysom make? Because I just like hearing tales of Taysom, you know?
Well, like, so so as a college fan, like, memories of him at BYU, where like there was a game where he just absolutely terrorized Texas, like, you know, if any Texas Longhorns fans happen to be hearing this, they're like, they're not listening anymore.
They know.
It was, he ran for something like 300 yards. I forget the exact number, but yeah, he's always been a special player. And seeing him go to the Saints was kind of like, oh, this is going to be annoying. And it has been. It has been annoying, to be clear.
Yeah. I mean, the Saints didn't even have him originally. I think we took him off the Green Bay practice.
Yes. Yes.
His problem, and it's like he hasn't really gotten hurt very much in the NFL. Like, I think he may have, you know, because they use him just to like break down doors and stuff. I think he got a concussion once or twice. In college, he like tore up his knee twice. And so he had like, you know, two seasons, probably had a mission in there. He probably left BYU. He was like 34. And so he didn't get drafted. And I looked at his numbers, and until I realized how often he'd been injured, not getting drafted didn't make any sense because he really is such a pure athlete, you know, and he didn't have Tebow's pride about playing quarterback. Mm-hmm. What else do you remember from this game? What are your... What the... I just accidentally hit a bookmark on my home computer, which is strictly for a work thing. Why is it showing my work? Has everything haunted now? Ron, go ahead.
I was just gonna vent on how everything's haunted now, but that's not the like everything, like Google everything can just give you something you didn't even know was connected to it, and like, hey, how about this shit? I'm like, I didn't even know this shit could be on this shit. How is this shit on this shit? I fucking hate this shit. I don't want to be part of this world anymore. I don't want to be on the internet. I don't want to do any of this stuff. It's like, like I said, I was. I got an Instagram ad for a chemical at work that I use. How would they even know that? That shouldn't be connected.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's nothing to do with the football. I'm sorry. Let's get back to the game. I didn't see much of it because I was with family. Thank God.
Yeah.
But as the more I read about it, it looks like, I mean, like, I'm kind of, I don't know. What I was thinking was like, all right, Derek Carr definitely has lost this team, and probably Dennis Allen has too. But they're also, in addition to losing the team, it seems like, they're going to lose the city. And I don't know what happens when that happens. I've never seen, like, Because, like, New Orleans fans now, we've got a taste of the promised land. We kind of have an expectation that we didn't have before. So, like, and I always say we're, like, classy and nice, and we have been. But, like, we could get downright vicious when it comes to Derek Carr and Dennis Allen. Like, they might not be able to go out in public soon. Like, it could, by the end of the year, like, I don't know what's going to happen with that. Like, because we're not gonna put up with this. I don't think we can put up with this. Like, this is a good team. Like, this is a talented group of guys. In a regular season under Sean Payton and a decent quarterback, we maybe have, like, one or two losses at this point, at the most. Like, because our schedule is so easy. Like, we shouldn't be 5-6. This is very infuriating, and I don't know. Yeah. I think I don't even know what kind of pranks or terrible things the city would do to Dennis Allen if they could catch him in a gas station, if they catch him eating somewhere. I don't know, because I'm thinking about it. Like, I got stuff in my head. Like, man, if I see Derek Carr in Home Depot, like, I got to do something. You know, like, I can't let this stand. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
He would throw a hammer at you and hurt someone else.
And you would feel bad. You would feel guilty because that person got hit.
Yes, I feel terrible.
So is it Jameis time?
I hope so.
Yeah, Ron has wanted Jameis for a while.
Jameis is entertaining for everyone. Like, whether he increases the the likelihood of winning for the Saints or their opponent. Everyone tunes in to watch and has a great time.
Yes. If we're going to lose, I want to have fun. And Jameis, the little bit I saw Jameis, it was like a half. And that was one of the funnest halves of watching Saints football I've had this whole year.
It was two touchdowns and two picks, just so you know.
Yeah, it's perfect Jameis. And he did that in two quarters.
And it could have been four picks.
That's the brand.
It could have been four picks on those.
It was so, and we lost. But yeah, we're
different in that way. I get too agitated, and, you know, I can't watch us lose happy and fun. I just, it's all misery to me.
Huh.
Yeah. No, I just, I don't have any fun with it. I'm like, this is horrible. And so I am not exactly prepared for the Jameis Winston experience, but I am not enjoying the Carr experience at all. There was something, there's like a New Orleans specialty football site. A bunch of like former New Orleans writers just went off and did their own thing. And they gave the impression that the team is still tight, but they are kind of not super into their coaches. Like, they don't think that Allen or Carmichael really have any way out of this. And I could see that, you know. But at the same time, what killed the Saints this game was a ton of red zone penalties. And who's that on? Ramchick committed two penalties. There was one, you know. I mean, it would have been a bad play anyway, because the Saints average on fades is like 4%. Yeah. They hit on 4% of their end zone fades. And that one catch was Michael Thomas reaching to the heavens and then landing with his ass, like, with like a fraction of an inch from the out of bounds line. Yeah. So they should have like none of them. But on one of the plays, A.T. Perry was supposed to run a fade to the end zone, and Derek Carr threw a fade to the end zone. But A.T. Perry thought he false started and stopped running.
Oh, shit.
So what the fuck was Derek Carr doing? And the answer was A.T. Perry chose not to run a route. And so that ended up being a field goal, of course. I mean, that would have been a field goal anyway, but we wouldn't be talking about the play.
Yeah.
And so that's it. It's another game where I think the Saints did not get a sack because we can't pressure any quarterbacks. You know, we got zero sacks. We got, let's see if we have, and we got one. We hit the quarterback once. What the fuck?
Dang.
You know, like, you didn't even move the ball that well. and we hit the quarterback once. So that's the kind of game it was. And that's what our line has been like the whole time. We are like 30th in the league in sacks.
This is a welcome change for me because I'm used to like Cam Jordan sacking Matt Ryan right. about 17 times per game. So this is right. this is much better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, our defensive line, like I don't think anyone has tried a single spin move. They just like run straight ahead and they get stood up. And on the rare occasions that the pocket collapses, it's like, you know, Moses banging the rock and all of a sudden the quarterback is off for a 12-yard gain because everyone else is out like deep in coverage and they still haven't learned. It's just been a nightmare. How much did Ritter must have run for something? Yeah, 7 runs for 30 yards.
He's evasive. Yeah, yeah. He's not a... run for sky by any stretch, but you know he's evasive.
He has no design runs and he ran 7 times for over 4 yards a carry.
Yeah,
that's not a good defensive line. Yeah.
Is Ritter gonna be the guy there? Like, is he, are y'all happy as Falcons with him?
No, well, we beat the Saints, so yes, but no. I mean, even in this, like, he made one of the best throws I've seen all season over the middle, right over a defender whose like back was still turned. Just perfect, beautiful, gorgeous throw. And he'll have one or two of those per game, and then he'll have a couple interceptions where it's like, I don't even know who he was throwing it to, if not the defender. And he threw 2 in this game. And he has been so up and down. I think he's like 3rd in the NFL in turnovers, something like that. And that's despite not playing 2 games because he got benched for a while. It's hard to imagine he'll be the guy. He would have to have an incredible finish to this season. I do think it was probably worth seeing what we had, you know, give him a season. That's fine. That's fine. It's not like the team is going to be awesome no matter who's the quarterback. So I don't mind giving him a season. And I would be fine with him as a backup, but it's hard to imagine he'll even if Arthur Smith is back, which, despite the fact that we're 1st in the division, is still not set in stone.
Right. I'm just glad the only real takeaway from this weekend was that Tampa also lost.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was
great. We can all agree that was great. Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, that's what was killing me, watching us constantly get in the red zone and then honk it, was I was like, we could have a 2-game lead in this division where the rest of us are, you know, if, you know, it's week 11, if the whole division goes 2-4 the rest of the way, which would make perfect sense. You know, we're 8-7 and, you know, we're 8-9 and we're in.
It's a race to 8 wins.
That's great.
I love it.
No one else is going 500.
Race to almost 500.
Race to 8.
And now I think, who do you play? The Jets this week, right?
Oh, the Falcons schedule down the stretch is like, it sounds like a bunch of Iowa Hawkeyes games. It's every, like the offenses we're facing, Jets, Bucks, Panthers, Colts, Bears, Saints. Ooh. Like, that's like 17 total points in those games.
Yeah. That's what was killing me. That's why I needed the lead, because we had the 2nd easiest schedule heading into the last 7 games, and you had the easiest. And you had the easiest despite the fact that we had a 2-game lead by virtue of us playing each other, right? Because we were a game ahead of you, and you still had an easier schedule. So I was like, they're playing nobody.
Yeah,
and they're playing Vanderbilt somehow.
Granted, Atlanta's lost to the Cardinals and to the Vikings when Josh Dobbs had been there for like 4 minutes. So capable of losing to anyone.
We lost to Josh Dobbs after an hour and 4 minutes.
Yeah, see, he was very experienced at that point, so that's fine. Looks like the next game is on January 7th.
Yeah, yep. We're going to that game.
Yeah, we are. I'm flying down to New Orleans for that game.
Tickets going to be cheap now. I'm glad I waited a little bit.
Good deals available.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, they're not.
That's a playoff qualifier, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Like, these teams are going to be like 7-9, a playoff spot on the line in the Nickelodeon game.
Again, for the 2nd, you know, I mean, that's the thing. That's what we had last year. And we still fucking blew it. So we have experience in this nightmare.
Yeah.
All right. So coming up, you've got all the championship games coming up, all the conference championship games. What is the one you are looking forward to the most?
So, Georgia Bama is probably a pretty obvious one. Pac-12 won on Friday night, Oregon, Washington, the last ever Pac-12 football game, depending on how that goes after realignment when there's two teams left. It feels absurd and impossible that there is a game in which the winner is guaranteed to make the playoff, and yet that game's conference doesn't need to exist anymore. I mean, it sounds like it's a good conference, evidently, if, you know, if the winner is guaranteed to make the playoff, but so it's like the ultimate college football game, I guess. Like it should be an awesome game. Oregon's really good, and Washington plays down to the level of every opponent, so it'll be good no matter what. That very well could be the best game of the weekend, and otherwise Iowa is a Iowa is a 23-point underdog against Michigan. Iowa's offense just does not participate. Iowa's all defense, no offense. There, you can bet even money right now on them basically not scoring in the first half. That's how dire it is. Their over under total for the first half is 0.5 points.
Shit.
So tune in for that, folks.
Oh my god. So can Liberty make the playoff?
No.
Because I thought they were there. Oh wait, are they in? They're not in Conference USA or whatever.
They are, but they have had the easiest schedule in the country. Their schedule's, depending on the ranking, it ranks like 130 something.
Yeah, no, I just thought that there was some fucking rule that Congress made about, like, because I know, like, the James Madison, they started, the Virginia legislature started getting up in arms, and then they fucking, who did they blow it to?
App State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When Liberty, if they get to play New Mexico State, the team that beat Auburn.
Right.
So if Liberty gains a transitive win over Auburn, they'll be 13-0, and then there will be a big, oh, they're keeping evangelicals out of the playoff kind of thing. It's like, well, you played the easiest schedule in the country. Don't start this shit. Like, you played a glorified FCS schedule. Stop. Settle down.
Yeah. No, I thought there was some rule about, like, an undefeated team from, like, one of the second-tier conferences.
The rule they made is once the playoff expands to 12, it'll be the top five conference champions make it in, and sometimes a mid-major conference will be one of the top five. So, like, a year in which, like, a Boise State or a Tulane is 12-1 or whatever, and if the ACC sucks that year, then Boise State or Tulane will get that auto bid,
basically. Got it. All right. All right. Cornell finished the year to Columbia. And I noticed, Ron, I don't even know if you noticed this, but Nicholls State did make the
heard
FCS playoffs.
We lost our last game, I think. Yeah, like, but I think they're good in conference or something. I don't know. I have never I don't know much about the team. But that's interesting. So,
but I noticed that they lost their FCS game. It was either 45 or 49 to.
Yes, they got stomped.
That's not great. that's not great. I think you kind of want to lose your last regular season game on a field goal at the buzzer.
Not for
instead of going and getting pantsed in the first round.
Yeah,
of the FCS playoffs, but I don't know that for sure.
I don't even know how any of that works for, like, the small schools. Like I like Nicholls, and I'll watch a game every once in a while, like, in person there. It's rare, but I'll do it. But I like when somebody's like getting in the playoffs. I know that's not, like, the real playoff. I know that's not the play. That's how I think of it. So I'm like, yeah, you can't. We're not even capable of doing anything. I will say this, we play LSU, I think, next year. So that'll be a game I really will watch and be invested in. But other than that, I'm just like, it's like Little League happening, a couple miles away. It's interesting. But
right. With that, it's the end of the podcast. And so we go out with the same music we come in with.
Oh,
but
good,
unlike
good.
The opening theme, which is consistent, at the end of the game, the result dictates the horns. And so we
do I get sad horns? Awesome.
You get sad horns.
You get sad horns. You can join in the sad horns. You can interrupt the sad horns with syncopated happy horns, I suppose. But that is how we go out. We go out with the sad horns.
Yeah.
Ron, are you ready?
I'm ready. All right.
All right.
Let's do it.
Three, yeah. two. One.
It's beautiful. I could listen to this all day.
Thank you to our guest, Jason Kirk. Pre-order his book, Hell is a World Without You. You can find it at jasonkirk.fyi. Also, listen to Shutdown Fullcast, especially Fullcast After Dark, when they recap the day's events in a live podcast, which is a lot of fun. And go dig my episode out of the archives when we made fun of Ron DeSantis's playbook ad.
And Clay Travis's as well.
Thank you, as always, to my good friend L. Ron Mexico, to Lunar Snow, who is going to be sound engineering the toilet that I'm broadcasting from, and Charles Starr for City Saint and Country Saint. Who dat, and see you next week.
Who dat?